Hello, Coral.
Hi, how are
Hi,
you?
I'm well, thank you.
This is exciting. This is exciting. I've seen Richard III, oh, I don't know how many times. And the last time I saw it, of course, was Sean McKenna as Richard
Right,
in
yeah.
Stratford. So, I guess I need to ask you how this all came about, and I know it's been adapted by Toby Malone. This is very interesting as well. So, if you could, yeah, just talk to me about how this all came into being.
Sure. So Toby, to the connection with Toby Malone is an important one because Toby and I are both theater historians. Toby's works on theatrical text, and so he's probably the person in the world who knows the most about how Richard III has been performed since Shakespeare's first production until now. And my interest comes from the play that Shakespeare borrowed when he wrote Richard III, which was called The True Tragedy of Richard III, and Shakespeare adapted that one. That play really uses direct audience address, so characters talking directly to the audience, to get you emotionally involved in the action. But that play wants you involved with the princes, the nephews that King Richard, who isn't really the king, right? Not rightfully the king,
Not
kills,
really,
right, in that story. So
Mm-hmm.
it's very, you get really involved with the safety of these children and with grieving over their deaths. So what happens when Shakespeare gets hold of this play is he gives that intimate relationship with the audience to the villain. And that's a, so it's a much more complicated emotional experience for an audience. And it seems to me that what's going on there is that Shakespeare's asking us, what is it about the way that the villain speaks to us that makes us not stand up to him? So there's something about that the mode of communication and the power relationships between this tyrant, Richard III, and his community and the live audience in the theater. So where that question, what is it about the way our leaders talk to us that makes us not stand up to them even when we know they're wrong? That question seemed to us really, really relevant just now in Canadian politics.
I would say, yeah, the past 3 days. Good God. I mean, Canada is a laugh. Oh, it's terrible. Anyway.
It's been pretty interesting to see how the political circumstances in Canada and the opening of this production have been cohering. And of course, we programmed the show, a year ago, so before even the bones of the historical king had been dug up.
Yeah, that's really interesting as well, because it brings, brings Richard back into everybody's consciousness again.
Well,
So.
this is it, and it makes us ask, why do we care about that historical figure? What is it about that historical figure that in some way speaks to us about ourselves now?
It's like it's like watching a horror movie. It's sort of like when you watch a horror movie, it brings out all these primal instincts that you know you would never act on, but you sort of live through someone else, and that's sort of been exaggerated. You know, today's like, I remember I talking to Shauna about this. Dexter, you know,
Yeah,
he's a
right.
mass murderer, even though he says, you know, in his mind, he's doing it to rid society of all the scum. But I mean, you know, and people just sort of, oh yeah, Dexter, they cheer him on.
Yeah.
Richard, you know, there's some people in today's society, he's another mass murderer.
Yeah.
So there's something about him. I don't even know. I mean, I've seen him played as a rock star,
Yes, right.
Tom McCamus. I've seen him played in every way possible. I don't know why. I don't know what it is, the attraction. Why there's this timeless attraction to him.
Do you know, there's something about it, you know, remember the way that play opens, that where he talks about how the war, so in the wake of the war, there's this sort of artificial jolliness that the new king, his brother, Edward the
Yeah,
Fourth, is
yeah.
creating. And that in that context, there's no space for him.
Yeah,
He doesn't fit, right?
yeah, exactly.
And so what he gives us in that opening, in the opening moments of the play, is a different way of looking at the world, a way of understanding what's kind of false about the surface level, everything's okay. And I think that appeals to us. It's, I think often, you know, all kinds of people. In the case of the character of Richard, you know, he was a military hero who's mm-hmm. not appreciated now, right?
No.
All kinds of us have that experience of mainstream normative society. We look at this kind of surface level, everything in Canada is okay. Mm-hmm. But from individual perspectives, our experience is of being somehow excluded from whatever this so-called prosperity and peace and ease is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in some ways that's what, and in it, you know, I can kind of get the connection to, like, I think actually the examples of Tom McGinnis as a rock star and, you know, Shauna McKenna thinking about Dexter, those two perspectives, like rock stars are kind of outsiders too, right?
Mm-hmm.
That whole thing
yeah.
about that genre is about the outsider, right?
Yeah,
rebelling against mainstream.
And he never feels like he fits in. I think he's jealous.
Yeah.
Very jealous of his brother, you know, his family. It's like, nobody has any room for me. I'm, you know, I also talked to Colin Feuer about this. He said, oh, it's all about the hump.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It's all
yeah.
about the hump. It's all about the hump and the limp. You know, it's all about that.
Yeah.
And it stems from that. And I'm thinking, so there's so many different levels of looking at it. But I, you know, when I think about it, bottom line, it's like, okay, he doesn't fit in. So, you
yeah,
know.
Whether it's because of the hump or because of, right, like the hump is a way of making him visually not fit in. Right?
Exactly. And so he's just like, well, I'm just going to force my way in. I'm going to make myself fit in. And this is, and anybody gets in my way, look out.
Yeah, that's right. So, I'm going to make you all fit into my world.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So how did you adapt this for today's media-saturated audience?
Like, well, yeah, so it seemed to us that really the core of now, for us now, of how we communicate with leaders, Canadian political leaders,
mm-hmm.
and with each other as citizens of this Western democracy is through various forms of communication media.
Mm-hmm.
So there is everything from mainstream broadcast media to social media
mm-hmm.
And everything in between. And so what that meant was we needed to think about that, so that core theatrical gesture of characters talking to the audience
mm-hmm.
and ask, what is that when it's mediated in mm-hmm. all of the ways that our world is mediated? So what for us, what that's meant is three live cameras on stage.
Okay.
One of them is moves with an actor all over the stage. So we see perspectives on all kinds of things happening on the stage. And a couple of them are fixed cameras that are like surveillance cameras.
Yeah.
So we get those two kinds of different perspectives.
Yeah.
And then we have characters really separated in space. So our lighting designer, who's a student, has come up with this fantastic set of images where characters are kind of hanging with lots of dark space in between them. So you get mm-hmm. that feeling of distant body, isolation and distance from one another, but they're talking to one another through devices, through iPads and Skype calls and phones. So there's lots of handheld mobile devices, and what we've discovered is that in our world, the world of the play, the really stable relationships are between a human being and their phone or their device, right? And the volatile things, the things that cause anxiety and conflict, are the embodied relationships between mm-hmm. human beings, the mm-hmm. characters.
There's another angle, Richard and women.
Yeah.
I'm just interested, without giving anything away, there's Margaret, there's Anne, and there's Elizabeth.
Right. Okay. So we cut Margaret. That's one of the things we did in this adaptation.
Okay.
And we did it because we're really interested in that question in characters having agency.
Mm-hmm.
So that those moments in the play where characters have an opportunity to stand up to Richard and they choose not to.
Yeah, she does.
So, then also she's very caught up with the curses, right? And and with destiny.
Yes.
And so we wanted to have a world in which destiny was not controlling characters' behavior, where they were really in charge of their own destiny. Anne and the Queen, Elizabeth, are very important characters.
Mm-hmm.
You'll also see in this adaptation, it's cut down really, really to the bare bones. I think we're running at about 80 minutes right now with no intermission.
Wow.
But we've left lots of space for those scenes with Anne and mm-hmm. Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah, key scenes.
They are. And I think that, to me, what's interesting about them is that those women are as ambitious for themselves and for the nation, mm-hmm. as Richard is.
Mm-hmm.
And they see alliances with him as ways of accomplishing their own political ends.
Yeah, exactly. Like Ed's going, okay, you know, I should marry him because that way I'll be safe.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well. And I'll have an opportunity to change him. Right?
Yeah.
Her language in that scene is very much about, it's about goodness, mm-hmm. right? And forgiveness. And in the, you know, that moment when she turns, she says, "I would I knew thy heart."
Mm-hmm.
She's hopeful. She's hopeful for him, I think, at that point in the play. Later, things change for her.
He's got that great scene where he, you know, sort of decimates her, and then by the end of the scene, he's actually coming on to her.
That's it.
Has woman? Oh.
Was ever woman in this humor wooed?
Yes, that's
was
it.
Was ever woman in this humor won? Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's a pretty powerful scene. Okay, supernatural. Kind of like he, you know, dreams play a role in this.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a dream element in this at all?
We've translated the dream sequence into a couple of viral broadcast that Richmond's army hacks into Richard's communication system.
Oh wow! So he's coming to
yeah.
Wow.
So there and we've done the same. I don't know if you remember towards the end the execution of Buckingham,
mm-hmm.
who has been Richard's right hand man, right?
Yeah, that's terrible.
So we've cast that too as a video that feels a bit like a terrorist video that Richard hacks into Richmond's system. So they're waging telecommunications war upon one another in this version.
Oh my God, that's incredible. Should we talk about the cast?
Yeah.
Who's Richard? Who is it? Yeah.
Ryan Bassett. So
okay.
He's a senior student.
Yeah.
Here. Ryan is really, really a strong actor. He's got just has a fantastic sense of what that outsider perspective is,
mm-hmm.
but also a real sense of the fun that Richard has.
He does have fun.
Yeah. Oh, know. Yeah. He does, and he's so no hump, no limp.
Wow.
Richard's deformity is kind of expressed as slovenliness.
Mm-hmm.
And that duplicity. So there's one face for the audience and mm-hmm. another face for the characters that he's engaging.
Yeah.
It's a very protagonist-centric adaptation. So there's even more of Richard in this version than there is in the original, like proportionally. Ryan's on stage for, I think he has a 29-second break in an hour and 20 minutes.
That's a pretty demanding role then.
Yeah, it's pretty big thing. Yeah, it's a big thing. It's a major senior project for Ryan and a really appropriate. Really appropriate for him, right? The right kind of challenge for him at this point in his development as an actor.
Oh, that's great.
I mentioned our student lighting designer as well. That's another. So this is also a senior thesis project for Hillary Pittman.
Okay.
I think this is the first time in the history of the department that we've had a student who is the design lead in lighting.
Okay.
And that came about because Hillary pitched us this project. She said, you know, I want to design the lights for this show, and made a really good case for why that was the right project for her to take on, and we're absolutely delighted with her work on the show as well.
Oh, that
it's
is
really
great.
Lovely work. Yeah.
We're talking about theater of the arts here too, so not an easy task.
Exactly, yeah, it's a real challenge. And also we're talking about a really non-naturalistic approach to,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's very high concept approach to
yeah.
lighting, and so that's always a you know, fantastic creative challenge.
That's a fabulous
occasion, yeah.
It's a fabulous space. I've worked on it actually a couple times. For the blocking,
yeah.
How does this work?
So there are a bunch of different locations present on stage simultaneously. You'll see, it's very non-naturalistic. So you'll see characters who might be actually standing quite close to one another in physical space, but are conceptually in totally different geographical locations. There's a lot of stuff happening on stage all the time. So you're always seeing kind of multiple images simultaneously, and then add to that the multiple video images happening. So from the audience's perspective, you're always, it's almost always presented with more than two, more than three perspectives on a scenario at once.
Mm-hmm. Well, people, we have a remote control culture.
Yeah.
People can multitask with, like, they can have the TV on, the radio, the, you know, the computer on. They're accessing their phone all at the same time.
That's right. So, and I should let you know that we're asking our audiences to keep their phones on for this show.
On.
So turn your phone to vibrate and turn off your flash, mm-hmm. but take photographs, record video, text, live tweet.
So this is very interactive.
Yeah.
Does the audience, let me think here. Do they, the characters talk directly to the audience? The audience, can the audience reply? Can they tweet? Can they do anything
they
like that?
They can tweet. So we can, so now, so I'll give you the hashtag. It's hashtag R3.
Okay.
So we don't have a way of displaying what audience, what the audience is tweeting while the show is running.
Right.
And that's largely because of the wireless system in the theater,
mm-hmm.
where our room was built in the days before wireless networks,
right,
and it's
yeah.
a fortress
yeah.
against
is,
wireless
yeah.
invasion.
Yeah.
So, the audience, there is nothing to prevent the audience from speaking back. My guess, so there's a lot of interaction between, in particular, Richard and the audience.
Mm-hmm. I would think so.
My instinct is that the show moves so fast. That it'll be that the audience will find it hard to get a word in edgewise.
I was just going to say,
it's a really quick moving show. But I want to let you know about an event after the Thursday evening performance. So
mm-hmm.
Thursday the 14th,
mm-hmm.
There'll be a discussion, an open discussion.
Okay.
I'll be there. A couple of my colleagues, Rob Danish,
mm-hmm.
And Gerald Voorhees from our speech communication
okay.
program here. Their work is on democracy and social media.
Mm-hmm.
So the three of us will be there to talk about those core issues. That are kind of at stake in this adaptation, and some of the students will be there coming back. Some of the performers will come back. Some of the crew will come back to be part of that conversation. And we're very hopeful that our audience will stay that night and let us know in that context what their thoughts are about the show.
Okay, that's great. Are you using like traditional Shakespearean?
Yes, we have made some changes. So, in addition to cuts, we've changed some words in some places. Most of what we've done is to clarify plot points, because we've cut so much out of the play that there are times when we just need a little bit of help remembering which character is which and what just happened.
Yeah, because there's a lot going on.
There is. So we've done a little bit of that. We've borrowed in those textual changes from earlier adaptations. So, and that's Toby Malone's work. So
mm-hmm.
Toby knows what all of those earlier adaptations did textually, and he's been able to go back through historical adaptations and see how other adapters have treated the text in various places. There's a really big influence from an 18th century adaptation by a man named Colley Cibber. So that's one of the things that Toby's turned to in that research.
Okay. Well, this sounds incredible. I know Toby's working on The Dream and Lear.
Yes, he is.
For Stratford next year.
That's right.
So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, we're very lucky to have him in Kitchener-Waterloo. He's come from Toronto
mm-hmm.
to do a postdoctoral fellowship here with me at UW, and it's been really fruitful, the connections with the festival and
mm-hmm.
And for his own research.
Well, UW Drama has always been ahead of the game.
Thank you.
There's been some interesting productions there, that's for sure. But this sounds one of the most exciting productions I've heard about in a long time.
Oh, that's great.
You know, you can take Shakespeare. There's lots of people that they just thought, well, Shakespeare for a modern audience. How can they relate to this?
Right.
But this way, this will be really interesting. So I will put this together in a podcast for you and get it up on the Sound FM website.
Great.
And on my own website. So I'd like to thank you so much for talking to me. This has been great. I hope I can come and see the show as well.
I hope so too, Coral. Let us know when you want to come and mm-hmm. we'll set a ticket aside for you.
Yeah, that's great.
All right.
Well, all the best. And I don't even know how to end this conversation. not Die in Despair. That wouldn't be it. Is Die in Despair still in there?
A horse, a horse. My kingdom for a horse.
Well, it wouldn't be a horse. What would it be?
We
it
are actually a, using that line. You'll see. You'll see what you think about that. We kept that line in, but we're taking a quite a different take on it. So
that's
so you
really
can let
funny.
Me know what you think. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Thanks,
Jennifer.
Carl.
Okay.
Bye.